Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here on the 17th of December. This is hour two. We continue to talk about the news from a Christian standpoint. This is our last final week, of course, before Christmas. It's such a beautiful time of the year. I know also, too, it can be a very hard and challenging time of the year. This is a time when those of us that experience loss and pain in our lives relationally, that it really tends to crop up at its worst and really kind of heighten. So with the team at Faith Radio Mornings, we are here and praying for you and just thinking about you during the season. This is part of why we grieve, but we don't grieve as those who have no hope. We are part of a kingdom that knows no end. And so we were chatting with my kids last night over Advent about the idea that we are people in God's kingdom that are not defined by our past. We are defined by our future, that we do have a future coming of a king that we wait for in this Advent season as he comes again to set everything right in this world. It doesn't take away from the pain and the suffering that happens in our lives, but as we are in this Advent season, we can lift our eyes towards the future and to the hills where our help comes from and know that Jesus will one day return and again set things right. And of course, on Faith Radio Mornings, as we talk about those sorts of things, we talk about theological topics and topics within our faith so often. And we wanted to have Colin Hansen of the Gospel Coalition, journalist and editor there, come on the program this morning and review some of the significant stories of 2018. There's so many from a theological standpoint. Good morning, Colin.
Oh, good morning.
So I'd be curious, as you generated this list of 10 of the top theological stories, how did you possibly choose, Colin? By what criteria were you using to sort this out? Because it feels like there could be 100.
Yeah, it really could be. Part of this is a gut feel. I've been doing this for about 11 years, so this isn't my first time working through these things. I do also have some metrics at the Gospel Coalition website. We had about 23 million users this last year, people visiting our site. And so I'm able to see how many people are tracking with which stories. I can see if a certain book review got a lot of attention or a certain news article was really popular. So, for example, I'll jump straight ahead to the number one issue related to Me Too. The Rachel Denhollander testimony talking about the abuse scandal at Michigan State University and ultimately in the USA Gymnastics, that was by far the most viewed thing we had this last year. So that's criteria in terms of just sort of like what were people most interested in, what were people most fascinated by. But ultimately, I'm also trying to assess these from a specific theological perspective as well. And so that's part of what helps me to narrow it down a little bit. At the Gospel Coalition, we have a specific viewpoint that we're trying to come from to help people to understand a biblical evangelical theology. And so that also helps us to narrow things down to issues that help shape evangelical life, thought, and mission in 2018.
Well, we certainly love the Gospel Coalition here at Faith Radio Mornings as a credible source to be able to come and talk about just these issues. And Colin, when we come back from break, let's jump into some of these big ones. I know many of them had to do with matters of sexuality, but I also see that we had quite a bit of conversation this past year on unhitching the Old Testament from the New Testament. So lots to get to next with Colin Hansen of the Gospel Coalition, where we will review together some of the top 10 theological stories of 2018.
Was too certain for shepherds in fields as they lay in fields.
I hear the angels singing, hallelujah.
Ah, Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I certainly love this time of year and all of the choices that Rachel and Paul make in studio to bring so much of the Christmas music to us as we celebrate the birth of our King Jesus, continuing to fix our eyes on him. And Colin Hansen of the Gospel Coalition is joining us here at the top of this hour to help us do just that as we think through the top 10 theological stories of the year. And Colin, we could probably spend our entire segment on dimensions of sexuality in our culture and so many different conversations about it. Let's just pick two here, starting with the top news story in your mind of 2018, and that had to do with the Me Too movement and so many of the questions about the way men are treating women in our country and what that means moving forward.
Right. So this was one where this was not just affecting Christians. This was widespread. We all know about the situation in Hollywood. We know about the situation in politics as well. But it's not every year where you have one of the most influential pastors in the evangelical world of the last 40 plus years, Bill Hybels at Willow Creek Community Church, where his career, he was heading toward retirement, but his career ending in a measure of disgrace because of a pattern of treatment toward women over time, a pattern that he continues to deny as far as I can tell, but which has, you know, led his church to separate themselves from him and to be able to shift course and let a lot of leadership turn over there. So given the significance of Willow Creek Community Church and that seeker-sensitive model of attractional megachurch ministry, that was definitely number one. But you pair that with, as I mentioned before, a very specifically theological voice talking about theological issues like justice and like penal substitutionary atonement. That's Rachel Den Hollander. She just recently won an award from Sports Illustrated for most influential or inspiring figure of the year. So it's very rare that we would have somebody speaking with that kind of theological clarity, with that kind of global stage, talking about what was ultimately likely to have been the largest scandal in the history of American amateur athletics. That's what made it the number one story for me.
Well, and certainly, Colin, this is one of those moments that I think we could safely say that if we could read historians maybe 50 or 100 years from now, and they would be reflecting back on this time, this it's not to overstate it to say that this really is quite a seismic sea change that's happening in male-female relationships in our country.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think one of the main factors there as well is just we undersell how much media have changed this dynamic. So a lot of these people are, I mean, they're leadership figures who are media gatekeepers. They're people who are either running organizations or there are ways for them to have shut down accusations or to shut down people from being able to spread news about them. But that just doesn't work this way anymore in this culture. There are all kinds of ways to be able to get the message out. Now, of course, I can connect this, and we can. One other reason this was my number one story is because of the confirmation hearings with Justice Kavanaugh as well. But we saw within that situation, whether or not how you regard some of those accusations is not the main point. The main point is that at least some of them that came out turned out to have been false, or at least specious, or they didn't have much apparent merit to them. Well, that's what's going to happen. And some of that came through some mainstream figures as well. Just the proliferation of social media, the fragmenting of media, the desperate push for clicks. That's another reason that a lot of these messengers are able to get out. And some of that, as we can see here with Rachel Den Hollander and others, is really positive. A reckoning after coming after decades or at least years of sinful behavior on the part of leaders. And it is like anything else in this world, it's also going to be mixed. And that is a fraught situation for us going forward.
Well, and certainly from a watershed standpoint, not just male-female relationships in our country, but you listed number 7 as some of the theological stories of 2018 that merited the most attention as gay Christianity forcing everyone to choose sides. And I'll say this, Colin, I know in my neck of the woods within the Covenant Church, it is a very significant conversation that is sort of rending that organization a little bit. I was on a plane recently and ran into a pastoral friend of mine who was talking about how his life in the United Methodist Church has really shifted in the sense that people are picking sides there. And this is true across denominations. It seems that sides are being chosen, whether you're going to embrace or deny gay Christianity.
Right. So I grew up in the United Methodist Church, and I'll be really surprised if one of my top stories for 2019, if the Lord should tarry, doesn't relate to the United Methodist Church and their meetings next year, where they've been pushing on these issues and talking about these issues for a really long time. And hopefully they'll finally come to a settlement between the so-called affirming side that are trying to revise biblical teaching to favor homosexuality and those who are maintaining the traditional Christian biblical approach to it. We'll see how that plays out. You mentioned there are other denominations like the Covenant Church. And part of what I was getting at in this number seven story is even a little bit more nuanced, because there are people who do not affirm homosexuality as a holy act, as other people would, but who instead actually say that it's not okay, and they choose to remain chaste even if they have inclinations in that direction, but will still use the terminology gay Christianity. But you can understand the confusion that arises with that, and you can understand a lot of questions. Wait, what exactly does that entail? What does it not entail? And so even in denominations such as the Southern Baptist Convention or the Presbyterian Church in America, very large evangelical Orthodox denominations that would not be close to the Methodist Church in terms of having affirming churches and things like that, this is the kind of debate that they're having there, of people even saying, no, the Bible says this is wrong, I'm not going to do it, but I'm still going to call myself a gay Christian. And what does that mean in terms of our identity in Christ, to label ourselves according to either our sin or our temptation? That was a major issue in 2017 or 2018. And I think that's one reason why it made this list and probably will continue into 2019 and beyond.
Yeah, it certainly is a very tricky conversation to suggest that my very identity is related to my sense of sexual attraction, and that right. is a rightly ordered identity, even if it's a wrongly ordered practice. It leads to a lot of confusion, Colin. And we'll take a short break when we come back here, and we'll continue to talk with Colin Hansen of the Gospel Coalition about some of the top news stories theologically from 2018. If you want to see this entire article, just go to thegospelcoalition.org, and you can catch what Colin had to say from a short basis about each of these topics, and then click through some of the longer articles. So more to come with Colin Hansen next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. We're chatting this morning with Colin Hansen of the Gospel Coalition about some of the popular and top news stories from a theological standpoint from 2018. And Colin, I see that number two on this list, and it was quite a story, is that one of the more influential American pastors, Andy Stanley, suggested that we need to really emphasize Jesus and the resurrection before getting anything out of the Old Testament, and in some ways sort of split the two and maybe created almost this good cop, get bad cop relationship within the Trinity, where we reject the God of the old in favor of the God of the new.
Yeah, so like kind of like what I mentioned with Bill Hybels in the number one story, what happens in this era, and the megachurch phenomenon is still kind of within many of our lifetimes, what happens with one of these major figures, because of the extent of his publishing, his speaking, conferences and things like that, is going to reverberate around the world. And so we have it with Andy Stanley as well. You know, for the last number of years, Andy Stanley has made some comments about how we need to unhitch from the Old Testament. And I think there's a couple different ways you can understand that. And I mentioned that in my article at the Gospel Coalition. If, in part, you can understand him to mean what you actually said in the introduction. If you're having an evangelistic or an apologetic conversation with somebody, it's best to start with the resurrection. You don't want to start with more or less like the canonical attestation and development of the Old Testament, how the Old Testament came together. Okay, that's going to be confusing for you to understand, and it's going to be very confusing for that other person to understand. And if you were able to prove that to them, mind you, somebody who does not have the Holy Spirit working at that point in their lives, then where are you? Because you're nowhere closer to them becoming a Christian, or maybe you're a step closer, but ultimately they haven't professed the resurrection of faith in the resurrection of Jesus as atoning sacrifice. So That's one way to put it. But the other way is what you said there as well. I think we have a major theological challenge within evangelicalism that many people think the Old Testament is old in the sense that it's irrelevant to the New Testament. Or worse, they take that full step toward the ancient heresy that we call Marcionism, and they create that dichotomy between the Old Testament and the New Testament God. The Old Testament God was a God of judgment. He was mean. He was inaccessible. And then there's the New Testament God. He's Jesus, and he's really nice, and he's kind, and all the kids come to him. That's a gross caricature that does not factor in all of Jesus' teaching about judgment and revelation. And at the same time, the Old Testament, it's abounding in grace toward God's people and the promise for a salvation for the entire world. So Stanley being able to come in, it's not exactly clear where he stands on that, but his overemphasis, I would say, on the differences between the Old Testament and the New Testament, his dramatic statements like we need to unhitch from the Old Testament, and also his dramatic statements like you shalt not obey the Ten Commandments, that's another one of his popular phrases, I think are very unhelpful. But again, Stanley is enormously popular, and he published with a major evangelical publisher in Zondervan. And so thus, it's the number two story of 2018.
Yeah. Sure, it's a big story. You referenced Marcion, the second century theologian who chucked out all the Old Testament and suggested those early believers follow just a few letters from Paul and maybe the Gospel of Luke. And I thought about that, too. Here we are again 2,000 years later having the same conversation. And, of course, lots of other stories to get to in this. And I see that number 10, and it's a recent story, and it has to do with what you were just describing about a sense of apologetics and maybe even our missionary work in this world. And we saw the death of John Allen Chow, a young missionary who tried to go to the North Sentinelese Island and bring the gospel to a people that we knew about, but hitherto remain unreached, and we saw his death, and that created quite a bit of controversy on both sides of it.
Right, so there's a theological discussion at the outset here, which is, do people who don't know Jesus, have never heard of Jesus, do they need to believe in him to be able to be in heaven? Now that's been a long-term debate among Christians, but certainly John Allen Chow held the view that I would hold as well, which is that, yes, there is an urgent mandate for us to spread the news of Jesus so that all might hear the name of Christ and have an opportunity to be able to profess faith in him. And so that's what motivated him. It's what motivated him to be willing to risk his own life because of the eternal stakes at play. So that theological debate was had from the outside world looking in, saying, what kind of fool would make this mistake? But even there were some people within the church saying that disagreeing with his theology there. So that's part of what made that controversial. But even among those people who share a sense of the urgency of this missionary impulse that we have from Matthew 28, from Jesus himself in the Great Commission, still had a lot of questions about whether or not this was an enterprise that he should have engaged in, whether it had any prognosis of success, and whether or not he had adequate training. So this was not on my original list. This one came very quickly and burst into all kinds of different and pretty fascinating debate, not only in the mainstream media. I think the New York Times had one of the most interesting articles about this, but also was very intense even within Christian circles in 2018.
We're talking with Colin Hanson this morning from the Gospel Coalition, reviewing some of the top 10 theological stories of 2018. Colin, we have just over a minute left, and we've been talking a little bit about leadership with Andy Stanley in the Evangelical Church. 2018 certainly saw quite a bit of transition to a new guard of leadership in the evangelical community.
Yeah, so we Billy Graham's death was one that those news stories we didn't know which year it was going to fall into, but we knew it was imminent and upon us. And Billy Graham had not been a major evangelical leader for some time. His ministry time had ended. And yet, nevertheless, I could name probably a dozen evangelical institutions off the top of my head that are looking for leaders, not transitioning mainly because of death, but because of retirement. And look back on 2018, I've never before seen a year like this with so much transition at the top levels of evangelical leadership. But that may end up being a 2019 story as well, because many of those positions at key evangelical institutions have not yet been filled.
Well, Colin, if our listeners want to check out the entire list in the top 10, and also you have links throughout this list where they can research these topics more fully, where can they go to see this?
Just go to thegospelcoalition.org and just search for top 10 theology stories. That's all you have to do. Or just punch in my name, Colin Hanson. You'll find it there.
Well, I love it. Thanks for joining us and reviewing some of these stories, Colin. I hope you have a great Advent week ahead and then celebrating the birth of our King this time next week.
Amen. Thank you very much.
Take a break here for Breakpoint and some bottom of the hour news, and we come back for the last segment of Faith Radio Mornings on the 17th of December. I'll be joined by Dr. David Aikman, and we'll talk about some of the global news items from a Christian standpoint. Well, from the fact that you can't make this stuff up news headlines, I see that Los Angeles restaurant is redefining decadence. Think about eating treats during this Christmas season. Baby J Burgers is offering a $500 brownie that is coated in a glaze made with Johnny Walker. It's served with a Monte Cristo cigar. And get this, it is covered with 24-karat edible gold. I don't know where people come up with these ideas. I don't even know how to find gold in my local Cub or supermarket, but this might be one to avoid as we're trying to avoid the treats this holiday season. Last Friday on Faith Radio Mornings, I was joined by Adam Holtz of PluggedIn.com that does such great movie reviews for his website, and he was talking with us about how to handle when we see graphic content in movies.
That show has some really graphic stuff. And again, I think it just speaks to, in a desensitized culture, what these producers of this content feel like they have to do to get and hold people's attention. And so I think it says a lot about where we're at in our cultural moment. I don't remember the reference, but there's a scripture that said, you know, blessed is the man who is not condemned by what he approves of. That's a paraphrase. But, you know, what is it that we're willing to take in uncritically and passively and just say, well, that's just the way it is? And I'm not saying that you can never see an R-rated movie or never watch one of these shows, but I think we need to be careful to evaluate what is my motivation for watching this and how is it affecting me, and really be honest about both of those questions.
I always love having Adam on the program on Fridays. He does such a great job reviewing video games and movies, Netflix shows, anything within popular media culture. If you want to catch his entire segment from last week, you can go to myfaithradio.com and catch what Adam had to say about movies with graphic content, as well as a series of reviews that he did. Well, I see that we've got Dr. David Aikman on the line. He'll be joining me next, and we're going to talk a little bit about some of the ongoing developments of Great Britain leaving the European Union, as well as the war in Yemen and the impact that has on us as Christians in this world.
I know a young man who has trouble admitting his fault. When something goes wrong, even though the whole family knows he's to blame, he gets red in the face arguing his innocence. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Parents with an angry son need to gently and firmly address his victim attitude. If mom and dad don't step in, this young man will only grow more irate. He'll blame the world for all of his woes. Down the road, it'll hurt his relationships with loved ones and with the Lord. Take a stand, mom and dad. Wait for the right moment to bring up the issues you see in your son. Be clear by dealing with his attitude now. You're building character into your son. And one day, he'll be a grown man who walks in humility.
Looking for more parenting wisdom? Go online to ParentingTodaysTeens.org or search for Parenting Today's Teens in your favorite app store.
My name is Bond, James Bond.
And that, of course, is the voice of Dr. David Aikman, who's a former journalist with Time Magazine, about 20 years covering the news with that organization, now the editor of Godspeed Magazine, highly recommended news source for trusted news items from around our world. Good morning, David.
Good morning to you. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Looking forward to Christmas. This is obviously the last week of Advent before celebrating the birth of our King. And I know you and I did some tape things that we're going to air over the holiday schedule. Just give us a sense again of some of the ways in which you're going to celebrate Christmas in Ireland.
Well, I'm going to a festivity of my niece, the second youngest daughter of five daughters of my sister who lives quite nearby. Well, nearby in Ireland is sort of half an hour away, but there are going to be all of my great nephews, grand nieces, and everybody else there. I'm just delighted.
Yeah, it should be a great week. Looking forward to that time together as well. And appreciate all the time you've spent in 2018 with us on Faith Radio Mornings covering the news. And one of those items that we seem to touch on most weeks, David, is what's going on with Brexit. And that's Great Britain leaving the European Union, not just because you're from Ireland or I enjoy the British Isles, but because this really is the first time we're seeing a country leave the European Union. And this is going to have some global impact. So give us a sense of where we are in the process right now.
Well, it's an amazing thing. Great Britain, the United Kingdom, has the fifth largest economy in the world, and it's the second largest economy in the EU after Germany. And it takes a huge amount of imports from the EU and, of course, exports an awful lot to the EU in return. And there's going to be a huge shift because if you subtract basically a large chunk of the whole EU budget from the central administration in Brussels, you really weaken the power of the EU to affect change in whatever countries it's controlling over. And in Britain, we have to say that this is the most serious constitutional crisis that has occurred in peacetime since World War II. I mean, I can't think of any historical situation where there has been such confusion between the Prime Minister and other ministers, between the governing leadership, political leadership, and members of, in this case, Theresa May's own party, confusion in the opposition front bench, and real dismay amongst ordinary people at what on earth is going wrong. People keep saying, Brexit, let's get on with it. What's all this delay about? And it's really come to a major fork in the road, and how it continues will be very important for the whole future of the constitution of the UK.
Well, and certainly as I follow the story, David, what I'm seeing, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that you have people that are not satisfied with the agreement that Theresa May negotiated with Brussels, but they're not satisfied from both sides of the political aisle, that there's some that say it's way too soft of a Brexit and leaves the United Kingdom too aligned with the European Union, and you have other people that are opposing Brexit and the idea of it altogether. And if this can't get resolved, there's really only one of two ways forward. One is a crashing out with a hard Brexit, or the possibility of doing a new referendum. What do you see in terms of, this is March that this is supposed to happen. What do you see over these next 3 months?
Well, that's right. March 29th, I think 11 p.m. in the evening, the UK officially leaves the EU. And there is no agreement that the sovereign parliamentary body, the House of Commons in the UK, has signed on to. They haven't signed on to Theresa May's agreement with the EU, and I think it's in all probability that they won't. So what are the alternatives? Well, one indeed is crashing out on the WTO terms and just taking your chance that individual UK companies will be able to export to the EU under conditions of the WTO. And of course, if Britain is out of the EU with or without agreement, the UK will be able to negotiate free trade deals with many other countries, including the United States and the British Commonwealth. But if, as some people want, there is a call for a second referendum, then you have real mayhem developing. Because, first of all, the first referendum was sold to the UK people and Parliament by the then Prime Minister David Cameron as a once and for all shoe that, you know, if it didn't fit the foot, well, okay. If people voted against it, fine, we'll accept that. And it's just a one-time go. But if there's a second referendum, let's say the Remainers won the second referendum by 52% to 48%, which was the margin of victory of the Leave group in the first referendum. Well, what happens? Then the Leave group comes back and say, hey, we've got to make this the best of three. Okay, we won one, you won one, so let's go for a third. And this is absolutely chaotic. I mean, it shows the weakness of using a referendum to determine a major direction in national policy.
Well, David, regardless of the way that it goes and the crashing out or sort of a stay or however it goes, this is one of those situations where it doesn't seem like some of the other stronger economies within the European Union can sustain the weaker ones in terms of France is not doing as well economically. Germany is not the powerhouse that they were. So is this maybe the opening salvo of a dissolution of the European Union?
Well, that's a good question. I think that the first part of the question you raised ought to be relating to France. Because I think the discontent with Macron goes well beyond discontent with the fuel tax that he imposed on the French people and which caused the yellow jackets, the yellow vest demonstration to come out. And unfortunately, all kinds of other things have come up. Some of the yellow vest protests have taken on an anti-Semitic coloration. And that, of course, seems to dovetail with an increasing anti-Semitic presence in English soccer matches by crowds who've been shouting rude words at the Jewish owner of one of the major football clubs in England, the Chelsea. So the populist movement, in a sense, is a desire to have traditional national democratic democracy rather than this multilateral, all-powerful organization of the EU controlling the affairs of their country. But there's a nasty side to populism that has all kinds of unforeseen repercussions, so we have to watch it very carefully.
Talking with Dr. David Aikman this morning, as we do on Monday mornings on Faith Radio, and just chatting about some of the global headlines from a Christian standpoint. David, we'll take a short break. Let's talk a little bit more about the events unfolding in France. I know my wife Hallie and I are planning our 25th wedding anniversary in Paris next June, and I'm going to need your advice about whether we should change our tickets. One of my favorites for this Advent week as we're preparing to celebrate the birth of the King. And Dr. Aikman, as we've been chatting about the news, what is your favorite maybe Advent or Christmas song? That certainly ranks in the top five for me.
Okay, that's very nice. I like Silent Night because I associate that with the wonderful Christmas Eve truce in the trenches on the Western Front in World War One. When German soldiers started singing Silent Night, Holy Night, and the British soldiers came out and started exchanging gifts with them. A one-off event in a horrible war. So that has special resonance for me.
Yeah, I love that song. I know you and I had a chance to tape some shows for New Year's Eve Day, and that was one of the topics that we covered. So if you're listening this morning, make sure to catch that segment that I'll have with Dr. David Aikman on New Year's Eve, reviewing some of the major events that happened, or it was Christmas Eve, around Christmas time, and an incredible story, Dr. Aikman. Well, you and I were chatting about Brexit before the break, and I know that France is obviously experiencing quite a bit of populist uprising as well, and we're seeing some of these protests that you describe. What do we see moving forward, and should my wife Hallie and I maybe readjust our tickets to Paris next June?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily readjust it at this point, because I think it's quite likely that the French situation will be solved without violent disruptions of life in France. I think they will find a way out of this, as the French always seem to do, because they like their country too much and they like the foreigners coming in and spending money there. So I think there will be a strong move to restore order in the country. So I wouldn't plan any radical change from Paris right now. It's a lovely place to go if you're celebrating any anniversary.
Yeah, it is a great place to visit, that's for sure. Do we see that France and Germany do have enough strength to keep the union together post this Brexit situation?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think one of the issues is that Germany basically runs the European Union. It is the sort of gorilla in the room as far as economic decisions go. And, you know, smaller countries like Greece and Italy don't really stand much chance against a German chancellor who really insists in going a certain way. On the other hand, Macron in France seems to want to build the EU up into something of a mini multinational superpower. He's talking about building up a European army by 2025. And this has very sinister repercussions, at least for all the Brexiteers. That really reinforces their desire to completely leave the EU, because the idea of being part of a European military superpower doesn't appeal to a lot of people in the UK.
Well, and as we talk about some of the other headlines, we have a couple minutes left too, Dr. Aikman. A little closer to home in the United States here, there's been some pretty wild fluctuations within the stock market, and in fact, the stock market dropping pretty substantially into bear market territory, and a lot of people are suggesting it's because of the ongoing uncertainty in the trade war with China. So what do we see in some of the developments there?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the most recent serious deterioration in the trade war was the arrest of the daughter of the fellow who founded Huawei phone division in China, and the chance that she might be charged in the U.S. for might be extradited to the U.S. and then charged for infringing restrictions on trading with Iran. Now, that I think will probably be resolved, because the Chinese promptly arrested to Canadians and charged them with all kinds of sinister national security crimes. So that'll probably be a trade-off. I don't think the trade war between China and the U.S. will get seriously out of hand, because I think actually the Chinese have much more to lose than the United States does in this case. And I think they'll probably resolve it without any further intensification of the struggle.
Well, certainly these fluctuations, I think, make so many of us nervous, but that's part of why that we keep our eyes fixed on Jesus, part of the eternal kingdom, because regardless of what happens in this world, Dr. Aikman, there is a kingdom that knows no end, and that's really what we're celebrating this week in Advent.
Indeed it is.
Well, we appreciate you joining us, as you have all throughout 2018. I know we're off next week on Monday as part of our Christmas Eve broadcast. Look forward to catch up again after the new year.
All right. Thank you very much. I look forward to it, too.
We'll take a break here, and we'll wrap up our show for the 17th of December on Faith Radio Mornings.
Silent night. Holy night,
Well, once again, producer Rachel Sutton right on point there. Dr. David Aikman references Silent Night. And the next thing we know, Bing Crosby is crooning through our radio dial. And we appreciate Rachel's work each day and appreciate you as listeners. If you have some music you want to hear this week during Advent, please text or call the studio at any time and we'll make sure that we get it on. Looking forward to another day tomorrow as we continue to talk about the news items from a Christian standpoint.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.